Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
There are mixed reviews as managed care Medicaid takes effect in Florida.
Now we feel it more because now everybody's in that system and the system has the errors.
Also this week, that same managed care transition has some medical service providers worried about their future as well as that of their patients.
There isn't a provider in the state of Florida that could sustain doing business with 50% of the current Medicaid fee schedule.
We'll also get the latest on firings at the Florida Department of Corrections, hear how the race for Attorney General is shaping up, and learn about a gathering of grieving parents from all over Florida. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Florida recently finished rolling out a new way of providing care to more than 3.5 million low-income Floridians. Nearly all of them, adults as well as children, are now enrolled in managed care plans. The state agency that runs Medicaid, the system that pays for it all, recently released a series of comments from various players in the industry praising the rollout. But as Lynn Hatter tells us, some groups say the new system is plagued with problems, new and old.
When Florida lawmakers decided 3 years ago to revamp the Medicaid program, the goal was to make costs more predictable. Medicaid is the single biggest part of Florida's budget, but physicians have historically been paid below what it costs to treat a patient. The federal health law, the Affordable Care Act, gave primary care doctors a payment increase, bringing rates up to Medicare levels. But Adriana Castro, a Miami pediatrician whose Medicaid clients make up a third of her practice, is having a hard time getting paid by the HMOs the right amount for her services.
Whatever Medicaid offers and pays, they should concomitantly pay the same thing.
Castro, who wrote a letter to the state about the issue, says that has not been the case. She is a provider for three of the state's managed care companies. Each company is paying different amounts for different services. Before the switch, Castro was receiving the proper payments from the state, but the state is not managing the system anymore. Castro says she used to have about 40% of her Medicaid clients in managed care. Now it's 100%, exacerbating the payment problem.
Those payment discrepancies were there from the beginning. It's just that now we feel it more because now everybody's in that system and the system has the errors.
The Florida Agency for Healthcare Administration says it's received Castro's letter and says the most it should take for a doctor to be paid is 3 months. HMOs have a choice to pay the higher rate at once or pay the difference separately. Under the statewide Medicaid managed care system, Florida has given the dollars it otherwise would have paid directly to doctors to the HMOs, and physicians and consumers sign up. But only a third of the more than 3.5 million Medicaid recipients selected a plan. Most were defaulted into HMOs chosen by the state, something Tallahassee pediatrician Louis St. Petrie sees as a problem.
More families and patients have been switched than ever before. We see kids every day whose moms wanted this plan and they got put on that plan and they've got more than one child and one child goes to this doctor and another child goes to that doctor and they have had extreme difficulty getting all of that straight.
St. Petrie is the executive vice president of the Florida Pediatric Society, which has been involved in a lawsuit against the state over the way it reimburses children's services under Medicaid for years. That case still is not resolved. And then there are the dentists who were fellow plaintiffs in the lawsuit.
You have to re-credential with the new companies. And some of them are taking as much as 6 months to re-credential these people, even though they've been a provider for Medicaid for 15, 20 years.
Florida Dental Association President Richard Stevenson practices in Jacksonville. Part of the original concerns with managed care was that insurance companies would further shrink provider reimbursement rates as a way to turn a profit. An insurer in Broward called MCNA Dental has done that.
They reduced the current Medicaid fees by 20 to 30% to the existing people that have been working in the system for many years. So Florida is 50th out of 50 states to begin with, and to reduce it by another 20% to 30%, it won't be sustainable for those people to continue seeing patients.
Stevenson is worried other HMOs will do the same thing. But the issue of payment is not new. Florida has historically ranked among the worst states for Medicaid reimbursements, and that hasn't changed under the new Medicaid managed care system. The Agency for Healthcare Administration says it's aware of the issues raised by the doctors.
As we did the rollout, we were watching everything.
Medicaid Secretary Justin Senior says now that the transition is done, the agency will begin to work on the problems that have cropped up, starting with making it easier for providers to register with the HMOs by creating a one-stop shop for them to go to. Furthermore, when it comes to the low numbers of people selecting a plan, Senior says the agency sent several letters to consumers warning of the switch, and he explains the numbers this way.
Prior to this program, there were a large number of people that were already in managed care plans in the state of Florida. And as we presented choices to them, what we told people, we communicated right up front that if they didn't make a choice, that we would leave them in the health plan that they had already chosen, which means that actually closer to 65-70% of the population is currently in a health plan that they chose.
ACA also acknowledges the issue of low reimbursement rates, but says it doesn't get involved unless the health plan loses too many providers. If that happens, Senior says, it becomes a network adequacy issue, and that's when the agency can act.
And as long as the plans are meeting that adequacy standard, if they can sign up enough dentists, then we're not going to take contract action against the health plan. If they're not meeting that contract standard, then we are going to take action.
Many healthcare advocates say it's still too early to tell whether the state's new Medicaid managed care system will work out. The state is hoping managed care will help it get control of costs and improve patient care. But physicians worry if something is not done to address payments, doctors will leave, and it will continue to be hard for Medicaid recipients to find treatments outside of the more expensive emergency rooms. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
While we're talking about managed care and Medicaid in Florida, the state has moved around 3 million of Medicaid patients into HMOs, and most of those HMOs are using the same contractor to handle home health and medical equipment. That means, as we hear from member station WUSF's Carol Gentry from Tampa, other home care companies are worried about their future as well as the future of the fragile patients they care for.
In an ordinary house on an ordinary street near Orlando live some extraordinary children. To stay alive, they depend on machines and tubes and the caregivers sent out by an agency called Children First. Registered nurse Maria Schiavi, co-owner of Children First, says some of the kids they care for were injured in an accident, such as a near drowning. Others were born with life-threatening problems that modern medicine can't fix.
This is little Juvens, and he's about the size of a newborn, even though he is about 5 months old. Eventually, are you listening to me? Yes. He's going to unfortunately need to have a tracheostomy, and he'll also need a ventilator.
This is our little girl, Yamaria. And Yamaria is on a full life support system, and she suffered a near SID. She has a tracheostomy, as you see. She is hooked to the life support ventilator. She does have a feeding tube in her stomach.
Yamaria gives no sign she knows we're there. She's in a coma. We move to another room, another four-year-old girl. This one is conscious, aware of her surroundings. But she can't move. She can't talk.
This is the oxygen concentrator that supplies a continual flow of oxygen to our angel, who is totally ventilator dependent due to her diagnosis, which is spinal muscular atrophy.
So she's watching.
This is her portable DVD that her grandpa gave her. Actually, I don't know that movie. She fully understands. She cannot verbalize, no. This part of the disease process, it's very unfortunate. She's actually seems like she's frozen.
These children don't know it, but their world is changing. The state of Florida's Medicaid system has moved each of them into an HMO, and those HMOs have turned their home care decisions over to another company, Univita Health. By the end of the month, the children may have a whole different set of nurses and therapists, maybe a different home. It depends on how Univita decides to handle it. they'll be customers of a company that is willing to provide services and medical equipment for whatever is the low bid. Schiavi's partner at Children First, who handles negotiations with HMOs, is Donna Logie. She says all the Medicaid HMOs around Orlando and much of Florida are contracting with Univita Health to handle their home medical equipment, called DME.
They offered the Medicaid DME providers in general around the state 50% of the current Medicaid fee schedule.
In other words, a $100 payment under traditional Medicaid would now pay only $50, Logie says.
There isn't a provider in the state of Florida that could sustain doing business with 50% of the current Medicaid fee schedule.
She told Univita how sick the children here are, how much high-tech equipment they need, and how much training the staff must have. She asked, can we negotiate?
And Univita's response was, well, that's what we're offering. You can take that or leave that. And we left that.
Home care providers say Univita has a conflict of interest because it has its own home care division. Michael Muchnicki, Univita's new CEO, says he can't discuss contracts and payments, that those are trade secrets kept confidential. Justin Senior, Medicaid Director for Florida, says the whole point of shifting to statewide managed care is to bring costs under better control in an industry long known for abuse and fraud. Bidding should make it clear what a fair price is, he says.
What the legislators wrote was that any provider could participate in the program if they're a DME provider as long as they agreed to the lowest price that any other DME provider had agreed to in the region, as long as they met applicable quality standards. If Univita enters into a dirt cheap contract with itself, it cannot then use that dirt cheap contract as the lowest price agreed to by another provider in the area. That's the first type of gaming that we said that is not going to be permitted.
Senior says Medicaid's competitive bidding resembles what Medicare has been doing. Government reports show bidding dropped medical equipment prices for Medicare by $400 million in the first round of bidding.
For several years now, the Medicaid rates in Florida in those metropolitan areas are significantly higher than the Medicare rates.
Senior says Medicaid will watch for complaints and will be doing consumer report cards that reflect HMO member surveys. But the small suppliers like Children First feel the game is rigged against them. For Health News Florida, this is Carol Gentry in Tampa.
Still to come on Capitol Report, we'll hear how the Attorney General's race is shaping up, but is one candidate being left out?
It's gotten better. I've been invited to all these debates without having to rant and rave to be invited, and that's certainly respected and welcome.
While some worry about the hard line a new Department of Corrections rule draws, the department secretary argues that's what should be expected of his employees.
To do what we have to do, which is first and foremost public safety, we should be held to a higher standard.
Rates for citizens' insurance are coming down for the first time in years, but customers still have questions. A program called Office Hours may help them get answers. And this week's Missing Children's Day ceremony at the Florida Capitol was a time families of child victims could grieve together. The Attorney General race is starting to shape up in advance of the November election. Republican incumbent Pam Bondi has released her first ad, and Democratic nominee George Sheldon's latest endorsement comes from some moderate GOP members. But is the Libertarian candidate getting left out of the race, with two candidates from established parties grabbing all the headlines? We get more on that from Sasha Cordner.
A new ad promoting Attorney General Pam Bondi's pill mill efforts just recently started circulating in major media markets across Florida. Streets is Bondi's first ad, and it highlights her ongoing fight to combat prescription drug abuse.
Pam Bondi.
As a prosecutor, I've seen crime and brutality fueled by drugs. As Attorney General, I banned synthetic forms of heroin and acid that are poisoning our kids. And with our amazing law enforcement, we closed down the pill mills.
Meanwhile, none of her opponents have begun to circulate any TV ads as yet, including Sheldon, who says he's waiting to release one much closer to the November election. As for his thoughts on Bondi's first ad, the Dem nominee Sheldon accused the Republican incumbent of taking credit for leading the pill mill effort that he says was led by the FDA and initially opposing a prescription drug monitoring database. Still, despite his earlier comments, Sheldon says,
"It was a good ad. But she couldn't run an ad on her position on medical marijuana, trying to deceive the people of Florida on medical marijuana. She couldn't run her ad on trying to deny women the right to contraceptives. She couldn't run an ad on marriage equality. So pill mills are the logical thing to do. But when she does something right, I'm going to point that out. When she doesn't, I think we have a responsibility in the campaign to educate the people of Florida.
Sheldon made his comments at a recent unveiling of a new effort he's working on in reaching out to moderate Republicans. He's already received the endorsement of some of them, including Marianne Stiles. She's a Tampa attorney who used to work for business-backed group Associated Industries of Florida while Sheldon was working for the state. Stiles says while she and Sheldon don't agree on everything, she believes he's the best candidate for the job.
He has more experience. He has served as Assistant Attorney General under Bob Butterworth.
But Libertarian candidate Bill Wolsifer, a Tallahassee lawyer, begs to differ.
I've practiced in varied areas of law. I run a statewide law practice. I'm in court probably more than the other two candidates combined. I'm a litigator. I'm a hands-on, real active practicing attorney, not a career politician. I'm at the end of my career, and I'm looking to serve the state in public capacity.
Probably the least well-known in the race, the 60-year-old says he doesn't feel left out in the race, though he admits he does get less coverage competing with two candidates from more well-known parties.
At times it does. Now, it's gotten better. I've been invited to all these debates without having a rant and rave to be invited, and that's certainly respected and welcomed, and I look forward to participating in them. But I have not been left out to the degree that other third-party candidates have. I've been pretty well included.
On a low budget, he says while he doesn't have the money to pay for TV ads, he does have YouTube videos talking about some of his platforms like the legalization of marijuana. According to the latest poll by Democratic-leaning public policy polling, Bondi is in the lead with about 43% of the vote, while her Democratic opponent Sheldon has 35%. Wolsifer has 6%, but he says he's not too worried about turnout thanks to the medical marijuana issue on the ballot.
I think Amendment 2 is going to create a huge turnout. I think people are going to come out that don't normally vote. They're going to come out to vote for Amendment 2 because they know that there are people that can benefit from medicinal marijuana. And when they vote for Amendment 2, they're going to vote for me.
All three candidates have confirmed a debate in October that will air in Orlando and Tampa. Sheldon is hoping Bondi will do at least four more, and a spokesman for Bondi's campaign says she's still in the process of reviewing the other debate invitations. Wolsifer says he plans to debate as much as he can and has signed on to do a forum at Florida Atlantic University. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
After the Florida Department of Corrections announced a new rule cracking down on employees who skirt the law, some are raising concerns about whether the new rule will also skirt employees' due process rights. Regan McCarthy reports the change comes as the department fights allegations of prisoner abuse.
Florida Department of Corrections Secretary Michael Cruz says employees working for his department should be held to a higher standard.
Our intent is to make sure that those bad seeds that we have, that handful, that they understand we're not going to tolerate their actions any longer. If they're going to continue down that path, they are not going to work in the Department of Corrections, because we owe it to the good, hardworking people to make sure that that don't happen.
The Department of Corrections has come under fire recently due to a rising number of suspicious inmate deaths and allegations of prisoner abuse. In an effort to crack down on the issue and increase transparency, department officials have created a website where members of the public can track inmate deaths and read details about investigations into any unnatural deaths. Cruz has also put all employees on notice that anyone who violates Florida law, whether on or off duty, will be subject to dismissal. But that's got people like Teamsters Local 2011 coordinator Les Cantrell worried. Cantrell works for the union representing correctional officers and probation officers.
And trust me, I'm not a proponent of people going out drinking and driving. I'm a proponent of due process.
Cantrell says the Department of Corrections has a history of taking action based on hearsay. He says Cruz's rule is fine with him as long as he can be assured rumors of a scofflaw are fully investigated.
One thing we'd like to see is investigations before we have a knee-jerk reaction.
And Cruz says that's what will happen, saying any action taken will be based on facts.
It could be our own internal investigation. It could be a criminal charge with a criminal investigation. Or it could be a combination of the two. Again, the bottom line is it shouldn't matter where it comes from as long as we get factual information that leads us to the truth.
In his initial memo about the rule, Cruz said the purpose was to ensure consistency. He said the department has not been applying a uniform standard, which he says has the potential of undermining the culture of professionalism. But with outdated Florida statutes, like one that considers cohabitation a crime, Cruz recognizes a consistent application might not always be possible.
I don't think you can blanket what we're attempting to do, because then you do lose the fairness part to people that people deserve. So, again, there will be some of these charges that when they come up, it'll be pretty obvious to us.
But Stetson University employment law professor Jason Bent says that has the potential to open the department up to lawsuits.
I know of many cases where people argued you had a stated policy, both in the private sector and the public sector. You had a stated policy of X, and you didn't apply X consistently. And I think you didn't apply X consistently because you were discriminating on the basis of race or sex or whatever.
But, Bent points out, Florida law already contains a provision saying state employees can be fired for certain reasons, including violation of state law. Meaning Cruz's rule is no different from what Florida statute already allows. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Insurance companies are notorious for dense, opaque language. But Nick Evans reports lawmakers throughout the state are holding so-called office hours to help citizens' property insurance policyholders break down the fine print.
After their most recent meeting with the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation, officials from state-backed insurer Citizens had good news. Rate decreases for nearly 70% of policyholders. This is the first time in years rates are coming down, but even with premiums declining, policyholders have a lot of questions. State lawmakers may have a solution. Fort Walton Beach Representative Matt Gates.
I thought that it was an important function to allow the people in my district with those policies to have their questions answered so that in the event of a storm or a flood or a fire, folks will know what's covered and what isn't and how to kind of manage their loss.
Last Tuesday, Matt Gates hosted office hours with Citizens Insurance. The idea is to put policyholders face-to-face with a Citizens representative and their elected official to clarify what coverage they have, what coverage they need, and how best to move forward. Gates says it can be challenging to go it alone.
I went to 3 years of law school, and sometimes I have a hard time understanding the specifics of an insurance policy. And I think when you get to have people sitting down across the table from one another to be able to discuss what's covered, what's not covered, I think you get a better understanding.
Brenda Hensley came to the event because she's seen a major change in coverage for her mobile home.
I wouldn't mind paying a little more if they get better coverage, but they dropped from $100,000 down to $47,000 in 1 year.
Dorleen Stevenson has been happy with Citizens. She wants to make sure she'll be able to keep her policy rather than be sent to a private insurer as the company works to reduce the number of policies it holds.
Well, according to what I read in the paper, it's people who are close to the coast, and I'm 2 miles from the Gulf. I'm not in a flood zone, so I'm really safe as far as that goes, you know. So I'm really hoping that I can stay with Citizens.
Citizen spokesman Michael Peltier says the program is a great way to figure out what fits for policyholders.
There's been instances where we've been able to either find them coverage somewhere else or to review their policy and find ways that we can help them out as Citizens policyholders.
Citizens officials say their next stop is Broward County. October 7th, Delray Beach Democratic Senator Maria Sachs will be hosting office hours, followed by Sunrise Democratic Representative Katie Edwards October 8th. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
You're listening to Capital Report on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, it can be hard for family members to move on with their own lives after a child is taken away from them. At this week's Missing Children's Day commemoration in Tallahassee, Florida Public Radio's Jessica Palumbo talked to a woman who's trying to do just that, and the investigator she credits for helping ease her journey.
Alina Fullwood can't name just one favorite video game.
Like the Final Fantasy series, I love that.
Kingdom Hearts series, Dynasty Warriors, all the Koei games, Warriors Orochi, Samurai Warriors.
The 20-year-old art student says she wants to design games for a living.
They were kind of my escape, and now I want to develop them so that maybe I can help someone else escape.
8 years ago, Fullwood's little sister, Coral Rose, was found dead near their family's Northport home. Alina was 12 years old.
It's Sunday, and we have to go to Hebrew school. And what happens is, while we're trying to find everyone and get everybody ready, we can't find Coral Rose.
A neighbor was eventually convicted of her assault and murder and is serving life in prison. And shortly after the crime, detectives found unrelated child pornography on the children's father's computer. The state put them in foster care, Fullwood says, and at the time she wasn't given an explanation.
And it was like not even a month after everything had happened. It was all just one shock after another shock after another.
These days, she says she's doing okay. Outside a tent at the Florida Capitol, she's holding two long-stem roses. A photo of Coral Rose hangs around her neck, marking her as a missing Children's Day family member.
Coral Rose Fullwood.
Alina Fullwood says the annual ceremony is her chance to heal alongside other families who understand. That bond, she says, also extends to the investigators who worked Coral Rose's case.
I spent time with her and her sisters and brothers trying to get information and trying to help out.
Florida Department of Law Enforcement Special Agent Al Dana greets her with a smile and a hug.
You don't seem to keep it as like a, okay, well, you're an officer on the case and kind of detached. You like integrate yourself into our family. It's like now you're an uncle and you will always be seen as an uncle.
Every year we come back, we see the family.
Maybe that personal touch helped earn Dana this year's Commissioner's Award at the state ceremony.
He has been instrumental in numerous child abuse investigations throughout the state. He is a highly sought-after law enforcement instructor who's trained thousands of law enforcement officers and child advocate professionals about sexual child abuse and missing endangered children.
He's officially retiring but says he can't help but stay involved as a teacher and consultant.
I take pride in training the other young guys that are going to take my spot because I'm calling it quits after 40 years, and I've trained them how to do it, and they'll carry on and hopefully, you know, stop child molesters and recover kids.
Alina Fullwood says the annual awards given to heroes like Dana also serve an important purpose for families like hers.
To have the awards right before the remembrance feels like it's going up, and you have that hope that the people that are still missing will be found with all these wonderful people.
The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children lists more than 300 Florida kids whose families don't know where they are. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
And an update on the Coral Rose Fullwood case. Jessica Palumbo spoke to City of Northport police, who say they suspect more people were involved in the girl's murder 8 years ago. Although they haven't been able to establish probable cause against additional suspects, police say they will reopen the case in light of any new evidence. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Nick Evans, and Jessica Palumbo. We also thank our contributing Florida public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.